Hello there. We're Vince and Elliot McNally.
Yes, the great-great-grandsons of map-making mogul Rand McNally.
And we'll be your hosts and tour guides on a trip across America, one small town at a time.
In the spirit of our great-great-grandfather, we're traveling the country writing the family's first almanac in over 50 years, Towns and Country, the McNally Brothers' comprehensive guide to small-town America.
Each week we'll be in a new town, and after getting to know the place and the people, we'll tell you, the listener, all there is to know.
In a show we call These Parts, a podcast putting towns on the map. Welcome, listeners, to another episode of These Parts. I am one of your hosts, Elliot McNally, but we all know that this podcast has more than one handsome prince in it. Your other co-host is sitting right next to me. That's my brother, friend, and traveling companion, Vince McNally.
Elliot, thank you. I could tell you were getting a little choked up. I'm a little choked up as well. This place is just full of memories, yes. not only for our family, but I'm sure for millions of families across this great country.
Millions of families, millions of little kids who had their childhoods, I would say, defined by a certain set of films. Films that you and I, Vince, were not really allowed to watch. We were more relegated to Ken Burns documentaries about cartography and geography. But a lot of kids built their childhood on these memories.
They sure have. We are in none other than the historic, the beloved, the dream-filled Disney Place, amusement park that is akin to the Disney World and Disneyland that many of you are familiar with.
Disney Place was the company's first attempt to try and franchise the Disney amusement park family.
First and last attempt.
Yes, first and last, because one of the nephews of Walt Disney, his name was Mitch Disney, decided to open up his own branch in Xavier, Montana, where we are today. Didn't work out. He was only able to secure the rights to the lesser known Disney films, let's say, but the amusement park still trucks on, it still exists, and that's where we are today. So, Vince, I think we should put this town on the map.
Can't wait, Elliot.
Listeners at home, take out your comprehensive Rand McNally U.S. wall maps and your commemorative push pins. If you've ordered ahead, you will have received some very fun Disney character push pins, not any ones that you might think of off the top of your head, because we couldn't secure the rights to those either. But Vince, who do we have in the pin family today?
I have a guy named Blasfo the Walrus, and he was a star in the take up of All Dogs Go to Heaven, All Walruses Go to Heaven.
I have Timmy the Pile of Dirt, and he was the companion to a little chimney sweep fellow that we knew and love in Sweep Me Away, which was a direct-to-Betamax film, actually.
In the Mary Poppins family of, yes. Of home videos. Yes, yes, of course.
But with us today, with yet another pin to help us put this town on the map, is one of the women who plays one of the characters at this amusement park, someone who brings these characters to life for all the kids who presumably come here. Would you introduce yourself?
Hi, I want to say thank you, first of all, for having me on your show. My name is Clarissa Shard. I play Bambi's mom at Disney Place.
Clarissa Shard, thank you so much for being here. I see that you're already in your Bambi's mom suit.
Yes, I always am wearing it. Always.
If you can just use your little hoof hands to take a pin and stick it in the map, we would be honored.
Oh, yes, of course. Let me try. It's hard.
Oh, here, let me help you. Here, I'll just kind of hold it
here. I have hoofs for hands, you see.
It's a very realistic costume, I have to say.
Yes, it's made out of a real deer carcass, so it should be. In my daily life, I have things to help me when I'm wearing my hoof hands, so I have extensions that I can stick into them, like forks and knives, to help me eat.
It's like an Inspector Gadget type costume, almost.
Yes, but picking up a pin is something I don't normally do, so you can understand why I'm having some trouble.
Well, you're doing great, Clarissa.
And we've got it.
I'm trying. Okay.
There we go. Well done. And let me be the first to say thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come be on our show. We know with all the kids streaming through Disney Place on a day-to-day basis, you've got your calendar full. Tell us a little bit about what life is like as Bambi's mom here at this historic place of fun.
Well, that's just it. It's a historic place of fun, you know. Kids come here to not only experience Disney, but learn something about themselves. And for me, my day starts really early, around 2:30 a.m. when I get up and I run through the forest in my Bambi's mom costume. I douse myself in blood and run as fast as I can. I'm rather slow because I have only one working leg. My other leg, sadly, was lost in a reenactment of Bambi's mom's death scene, which we do every morning at 8 a.m. at Disney Place.
So I was going to say that 2:30 a.m. is the appropriately named graveyard shift for your character.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. They don't require me to be up at 2:30 in the morning, but I feel like it's necessary to get into the character of Bambi's mom. Think of what she would have been doing at that point. She wouldn't be tucked away cozy in her bed reading an Agatha Christie murder mystery. She would be out in the forest foraging for berries and various other things that deers eat. So that's what I do. I wash the blood off in a stream near Disney Place around 7 a.m. And by 8 a.m. I'm in position to be shot in the head by the hunter.
Wow, there is a sense
of... That's not my whole day. That's just my morning.
That's just the morning. Well, even the morning has a sense of magical realism. Definitely emphasis on the realism and not so much on the magic.
Yes, we use real bullets. I have to be very careful. We have a helmet designed to take a slug and have me not die. But it's been a close call a couple of times.
I've also noticed that your costume isn't like a normal, let's say, if listeners of you have ever seen a Halloween horse costume where there's two people playing it, you are just a bipedal Bambi's mom deer.
Yes, I'm trying to make it as real as possible for the children. I don't want them to think, oh no, there's a woman getting hurt. You know, I don't want them to think that. I want them to think that I'm actually Bambi's mother and I'm actually dying. I want those tears to be salty and real.
Well, I think I can speak on behalf of everyone who's had a magical time here at Disney Place and say thank you for your commitment to the part, clearly taking the method acting to, some might say, preposterous lengths. I would say to the most logical length. You're sincere in everything that you do, it sounds like, and I'm sure the kids appreciate it. Take a minute, if you would, to talk about some of your co-stars, some of the other people that make Disney Place so full of dreams.
Yes, I mean, obviously, anybody can go and visit the statue of Mitch in the center of Disney Place. Children often go there and bedeck it with old brownies, as that was Mitch's favorite snack. Not fresh, old. And of course, there's the hunter, who has been my creative partner for the last 26 years, who shoots me in the brain every morning.
Are you guys married, or is there a love interest there off screen?
That was a long time ago. We were an item. It's true. The rumors are true. But after a while of somebody aiming a gun at your head every morning, you just can't do it anymore. It was a one-sided breakup. He's still bent out of shape about it. I won't lie. But we're professionals, goddammit. So we keep doing our jobs every morning. So, of course, there's me, there's the hunter, there's the statue of Mitch. You can go and see old Jasmine, who is an imagining of Princess Jasmine once she gets old and contracts diabetes. That's on display on 5th Street and Smile Avenue. She's one of the favorites of the children.
Old Jasmine... Also, if I'm not mistaken, I did a quick tour of the park just to get a flavor of the town. She's in a reclining wheelchair, and she has a saxophone. She's also a jazz musician. Old Jasmine, as they call her.
Yeah, it was a pun, but it also works with her real life. She was a jazz musician down in New Orleans, and she moved up to Xavier when she needed a new pace in life, as it were.
I've heard about her one-woman show, I Can Show You the World, that is just strikingly real and dark and an investigation into living with diabetes.
Yeah, yes, it is. And she is fully nude in that show, 18 plus. She does show you the world, as it were, in more ways than one.
Well, I know one thing for sure, Elliot.
That we need something for the kids and something for the dads, you know?
Obviously.
Of course, you guys have thought of everything.
If there's one thing this segment has done, Elliot, it's whet my appetite.
Me too, Vince. I think we should continue to satiate our listeners with a little segment we like to call Elliot's Eats.
So, listeners, Elliot's Eats is my brother's opportunity to dive into the cuisine culture of the town that we're visiting. He usually spends his days at one specific restaurant or eating establishment, getting to know the menu, and then he gives us the lowdown on how it was. Elliot, where were you this week?
I was at a few different places, Vince. As I'm sure listeners can empathize with, when you're at an amusement park, you like to go to different shops and different carts and sample a little bit of everything, you know?
Absolutely. That's part of the fun.
It also helped pad out this chapter of my forthcoming food journal. Chew on this, Elliot McNally's Food Guide to Small Town America. Vince, I know that you're really excited about this.
I wouldn't say really excited. I think really excited would be definitely an overstatement.
Be that as it may, it is still being padded out thoroughly with all of the cuisine I had today.
I like your book.
Thank you. Thank you, Clarissa. If you want to pre-order it, I would appreciate it. I don't know if you could talk your other actor friends into pre-ordering it as well, because we don't really have anybody on the list yet.
I already bought it on the black market.
I wasn't even aware that existed. That's a whole other thing that we should probably investigate soon. But right now, I want to talk about the food. And it kind of comes with a little backstory, and I'm sure that Clarissa, you can give some color to this, but the original sign over Disney Place was one of the happiest places on Earth. And over time, the sign had a sort of patina to it, and some letters fell off, and now it just says one of the places on Earth.
Yes, which is true, so we don't change it.
It is very true, but the first letter to fall off was the H, and so it read one of the appiest places on Earth, and this was followed soon by a lawsuit from Applebee's.
Yes, they sued us, but we were able to win that suit by arguing that the current owner, after Mitch died in that unfortunate tractor accident, Betty Colburn, was actually Cockney, so the appiest places on Earth was also accurate.
That's why there was an apostrophe there.
Yes. Yeah, we put that up to win the lawsuit, which wasn't entirely legal, but I believe the statute of limitations has passed on that.
Anyway, so Vince, when you're walking around, it is like a lot of apps, you know? It's kind of like an amusement park tapas.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense, Elliot.
And so the first thing I was almost able to try, but not quite because I am a vegan, was the elephant ears here. And usually these are a big, flat, sort of fluffy pastry with powdered sugar. It turns out here they are actually elephant ears because Mitch had a proclivity for poaching.
Yes, he was a big game hunter. He would occasionally visit Africa, Antarctica, the North Pole. He was a fan of both poles, really. And he would shoot animals and bring them back as gifts for his many children. Not a lot of people know that Mitch sired 68 children in his life. But he did, and each one of those children has a rug made of real animal skin. Mitch actually shot the deer for my costume that I wear.
I was going to say, that makes perfect sense. He shipped it across the ocean from Africa. And this seems to be one of the last remaining red-chested deer, or if not the last.
Yes, it was the very last one. He looked it in the eyes, said, "I'm sorry," and blew its brains out. So there are still brain fragments in my costume, which some may say is dark. But I say I use it to feel a connection to the spirit of the deer whose life I am now embodying. Does that make sense to you?
It makes perfect sense. Elliot, so you didn't try the elephant ear. Mm-hmm. I imagine it has a jerky-like consistency at this point, but what did you manage to get all the way from fork to mouth?
A really good cart is called the Tramps, and what this is it's a spaghetti cart.
Oh, based off of Lady and the Tramp.
Yes, based off the original Lady and the Tramp, I might add, because originally it wasn't two dogs, it was two humans. And so when you buy a plate of spaghetti, this very old sort of obese man comes over and he has to eat the other side of the spaghetti that you're eating.
I just want to say thank you for remembering the original Lady and the Tramp. It was not an adorable dog story in its first iteration at all.
No, it was about two hobos who were digging through garbage and finding food.
Absolutely. It was real. It was a real slice of life. It was just a problem because they couldn't get under that NC-17 rating that Disney so wanted.
Yeah, usually they try to at least be under NC-17 for all their films.
Well, I like to think that there's something to be gained, even as a small child, from watching a fully nude man floss his butt crack with a piece of spaghetti.
In a perfect world, we would all be able to view a scene like that in any number of mediums of art. Fortunately, we don't live in a perfect country, just the closest thing that exists. So, Elliot, you shared a romantic afternoon snack with an obese man. And where did you go from there?
You know, there were a bunch of different places to go. There was Aladdin's, where you basically, they claim that these magical carpets they make are edible. I didn't think they were. They're pretty fibrous, but if you roll them up, they say that they're a good kind of on-the-go snack. If they dust them with powdered sugar, they turn into sort of like a churro.
Well, that sounds good.
And Clarissa, you're here every day. Is there any place that you enjoy eating?
Oh, yes. I keep myself on a strict deer diet for most of my day. But what I like to do, so instead of eating myself, which I must do very little of, I present myself on the table. If you go over to Bambi's Bam Bam Shack, you can come there at 1 p.m. for the lunch buffet, where I will be laid out and there will be pieces of veal on my body, which you can feel free to snack on at any given point. It's like you're eating a piece of Bambi's mother, but it's not really my flesh, because then I would die. So they put the very thinnest slices of tender veal up from my tip to my toe. Come and eat off of me. The only rule is you can't use your hands.
This place is usually hounded by Japanese businessmen.
Yes, that's where we got the idea. You're correct.
Well, that sounds like an experience bordering on the truly transcendent. Elliot, did you manage to get to the place that I was meaning to go to all week, but never got to, called the Flannel Cake Stand?
I wasn't able to get to that, but I have heard so much about it, Vince.
It's a Huntsman-themed cake stand from Snow White. Therein, you take the batter that's wrung out of a flannel shirt onto a hot pad. Fries it up quite nicely. A great source of fiber, so I'm told. But I didn't get to try it personally. Clarissa, have you ever had the flannel cakes?
I absolutely have, but it's a tragedy why you couldn't get there. You wouldn't have been able to get there even if you wanted to. It's been shut down permanently. It's under investigation for murder.
The cake stand itself is under investigation for murder. Do you have any insight into what took place here?
A lot of people died last weekend. I'm not sure if you read about it in the news. They visited the cake stand, and shortly thereafter, we're all permanently deceased. Some people think that the cakes were finally getting their revenge. They were sick of being wrung out of flannel shirts, and by God, they were going to choke the next person that tried to eat them. Now, I don't know if you believe in that sort of thing, but after working for a long time in Disney Place, I can tell you one thing. I believe in magic. And I believe those cakes became sentient and choked those Japanese businessmen to death.
You said this was last weekend?
Yes.
Vince, why did we come here?
I continually have asked myself that over the course of the week, but one part of me is glad I did. For one reason and one reason in specific, because our listeners deserve to know everything there is to know about this place. And it occurs to me, Elliot, that as their episode goes on, they might have more and more questions.
There are definitely more and more questions that even I want to ask, but we want to give our opportunity to the listeners to ask them in a segment we call Wouldn't You Like to Know?
So as my brother alluded to, this is your chance as a listener each and every week to write in with your questions, your comments, probably this week, your concerns about the towns that we're staying in. We have time to read three each and every week, and Elliot has the first one.
I do. This one comes from Jillian in Report, Nevada.
Report, Nevada. Great place to go gamble. Thanks for writing in.
Thanks, Jillian. She says, I love amusement parks. I love to see the twinkle in my kids' eyes while walking around. But there's more to do in an amusement park than walk around. There are so many rides. And I wanted to know what types of fun rides there are at Disney Place.
Great question. Who better to answer it than someone who spends each and every day here? Clarissa, what sort of amusement park rides are popular here at Disney Place?
Oh, there's so many. I'm glad you asked, woman who wrote that. I, personally, my favorite ride is the Strangler, which is just an all-around out-of-body experience for any member of the family. You don't have to be any specific height to ride this ride, which is one of the benefits. From anyone from a newborn infant to grandpa can enjoy a turn on the Strangler, where you enter a cabinet which is just small enough to make you uncomfortable. It assesses the size of the person before you enter, so it knows that you're just a little off your game when you get inside. Once you're inside the cabinet, you will be in complete and utter darkness for about 45 minutes, which is time for you to reflect on your life and everything you've done wrong. Because in front of you, the only light will be coming from a screen replaying the most terrible and shameful moments of your life. Just take time when you're in the Strangler to go through some of those and think about what you've done and why you're bad. At that point, when you're feeling at your most low, is when you'll be spit back out into the streets of Disney Place. And when you think that your redemption is at hand, a long claw will emerge from the room and clasp around your soft neck, bringing you inches within death. You will be released after blacking out from anywhere from 20 minutes to 3 hours and come to, having been reborn in a way.
That's how the original writers got the inspiration for Fantasia, I think.
Yes, it was. It is for some a drug-inducing type effect.
Well, the first concern that springs to mind for me, Clarissa, is that the line must be terrible.
Oh, it's horrendous, but that's part of the experience, after all. If you don't want a line, you can always come over to where I hang out usually during the day, which is under the tree in Disney Place. And for $5, I'll give you a piggyback ride, deer style, around the amusement park. Just remember that I only have one good leg. So just keep that in mind. I can only go so fast.
That sounds like a thrill a minute to me.
Vince, did you have a particular ride that you liked? Because I know I did.
I sure did. It was the much maligned...
Was it the Strangler?
It was not the Strangler. Certainly not. It doesn't sound like my idea of a good time. The levels of reflection are probably a little bit too real, as they might say. I thoroughly enjoyed the much maligned Colors of the Breeze Pocahontas themed roller coaster.
So what happens when you're on the roller coaster then?
You're splashed with various colors, and there's a light breeze from an industrial fan. Roller coaster is a bit of a misnomer. There is a track, but you don't move on it. Instead, people move to you. Various assistants and maintenance workers move the fans about slowly as they splash you with paint.
That sounds kind of refreshing, though, on one of those hot summer days.
Not if you have a lead allergy.
Oh, it's lead paint.
Yes. We're not going to spring for any of that bear shit.
Well, that makes sense. My favorite ride was Walt's Wild Ride. And this has been deemed by many critics as a roller coaster of emotion. And it's sort of an audiovisual experience that takes you through Walt Disney's life and his anti-Semitic viewpoints.
It is one of our 5 most racist rides at Disney Place.
One of your 5 most racist rides, you say, Clarissa. Yes. Where on the list does it fall?
5.
We'll have to check out those other four, I'm sure, once we're finished recording.
Check the show notes from this episode for the official list from the UN's Crimes Against Humanity Division, who has released this list each and every year. Disney placed topping the top five spots each and every year.
In the racist roller coaster category.
We're proud of it.
As you should be.
You guys own it. It's part of Walt's history.
And I think we should be proud to get to the next question, which I see, Vince, you have.
I sure do. And let me unroll it because it's written in autograph form on a poster of Marco Mouse. And this reads, "Hey, Vincent Elliott, much respect for all that you do. As someone inside the showbiz industry, it's important to talk about the origins of the films that we all love. For instance, my live-action show Marco Mouse's Crazy Adventures features me, Marco Mouse, going across the sea to fight in Europe in the First World War. Maybe you could talk about an equally thrilling piece of cinema filmed right there in Disney Place called Deliverance. Thanks very much. With love, Marco Mouse." And a little mouse head drawn with kind of like a squiggly mustache.
Oh, that's cute. But he seems to be a little bit misinformed for being in the film industry himself.
Yeah, he seems to have gotten it completely wrong. Deliverance is not a Disney film, is it, Clarissa?
No, but it was financed by Walt Disney's trust. So a lot of people make that mistake. We also shot an adult film version of Deliverance on the site of Disney Place. So some people get mixed up.
That's where all those pigs came from.
Yes, it is. Yes. Have you two perchance had a chance to see Deliverass, the adult film version of Deliverance?
I have not, but I've heard there are daily screenings of it over by Walt's Wild Ride.
Yes, that's great. You can get off Walt's Wild Ride and get real hard. If that's your thing.
I managed to stroll by during one of the several 30-minute pig-on-pig sex scenes.
Yes, pigs notably are great in adult films because they orgasm for 30 minutes, leaving for a lot of good moments, a lot of good real moments.
Well, apparently they're smarter than dogs, so you can control them a lot better.
Yes, they take direction fairly well.
Yeah.
They're also smarter than, I would say, most humans in some really? Situations. Yes, you should have seen how the star negotiated his contract with me. I handle the contracts for all the adult films made at Disney Place.
Wait, does Big Hammy, the porn industry's most beloved pig character, star in that?
He is an extra, actually. But if you can see, if you look off to the left in the third scene, you will see him in the background giving an absolutely brilliant performance.
Yeah, the star of this one was Swine Jeremy.
Yes. Swine Jeremy, rest in peace.
His work with the banjo scene was truly inspired. Well, thanks for running in anyway, the actor behind Marco Mouse. Quite a treat to have a celebrity grace us. And let me say, your performance in Marco Mouse's Big Adventures, where you fight for the Italians for control over Ethiopia, was stirring, to say the least. Clarissa, do you have the third question for us?
For you? Yes, I've got this one that was sent in. Excuse me again, I have my deer paws. It's hard to open.
It seems like you're ripping apart the letter as you open it.
It's tough. It's hard.
Here, I can reassemble this for you, and I'll just place it down right in front of you here.
Thank you.
There, you can go ahead and read it.
Okay. Dear Clarissa, a.k.a. Bambi's mom, I want to let you know how much of an inspiration you were to me when I saw you shot at Point Blank Range that 8 a.m. morning in Disney Place. I want to know, where do you get your inspiration for that death scene? Signed, Brad.
Wow. It seems like you have a fan in Brad.
Oh, yes. I get a lot of fan mail. Much of it delivered by carrier pigeon, as we do not have a mail service in Disney Place. They just refuse to come.
I don't think anyone can fault them for that.
They made a decision, and we said, yep, good riddance. But But yeah, he's right. I do put a lot into my work as Bambi's mom. And in order to fully take on the role, as they would say, the way I got my inspiration was before I was given a role, awarded the role, I shot my own mother in cold blood. In cold blood on Mother's Day, just to rub it in. And how did I feel? You know, how did I feel? And I just try and recreate the scene that I saw with my own two eyes every morning at 8 a.m. for the children. I was never arrested and never caught.
Wow. Well, that is stirring as much as it is terrifying.
And I feel obligated as your friend, Clarissa, to remind you that this is going to be broadcast on national radio. And so you might want to lay low for a couple years.
So let it be written. So let it be done. I accept what I've done, okay? I don't apologize for it. I am a good Bambi's mom.
Well, that is the sign of a true method actor, I think.
Yes, I studied Uta Hagen in college.
I'm sure this will probably be used verbatim in your hearing. So to all our new listeners on the jury that will inevitably convict you, check out, my favorite is probably episode 50 from last year, our best of episode, Elliot. Thank you for writing in, Brad. And I'm noticing on the page it says Brad, age 92. So not just for the little ones, Disney Place.
No, we have a graveyard if you'd like to be buried here.
Yeah, it takes up a good third of the acreage of Disney Place. Because there's people that would like to be buried here, but then there's people that have to be because they were killed here.
Indeed. All of those Japanese businessmen have taken up another entire street in and of themselves.
They know what they're getting into. I dare say they're looking forward to it. Well, that was illuminating and enlightening and certainly a little bit frightening. Elliot, let's move on to a little bit of lighter subject matter.
Let's, Vince, in a segment we call No Gifts, Ands, or Buts.
So listeners, as you probably know, across this great planet that we live on, gift-giving culture is an important part of how we relate to one another. And when we're on the road, we like to bring that to life in a segment we call No Gifts, Ands, or Buts. We buy a souvenir significant to the town we're staying in for our guest, and the guest does the same for us. This week, it's bound to be great as we're at the national home of souvenirs, Disney Place. Elliot, should we start opening some gifts?
I think so. Listeners, as you know, in this segment, Vince and I will get our guest a gift, and Clarissa, you have graciously gotten us a gift. So I think we should do the honors and open what you've gotten us.
Yes. Here we go. It's unwrapping it now. It's a lovely bow. Elliot, what do we got? What are we looking at?
So, Clarissa, you're going to have to correct me if I'm wrong, but this looks like a Mickey Mouse hat, right?
That's yes. What it is? It looks like one.
It's got the ears. It's got the big round black ears, but it has a little attachment, a little mustache, sort of a Chaplin-esque mustache. It's narrow. It's like a little black rectangle.
Yes, that's accurate. I'm gonna have to warn you though. Once you put it on, there's no going back.
Perhaps we'll stay looking at it for now. Also in the box, black, white, and red regalia. Looks like to be worn on a military uniform. And a toupee, jet black with a tiny coif in it.
It says on this little armband I see, it says the Disney Youth.
Indeed. Once you put on the mouse ears, you might notice that inside are two small wires, which will implant themselves directly in your brain. And you will become mind controlled by the Lord himself, Disney.
Wow. Correct me if I'm wrong, but weren't later to be music darlings and still pop culture icons Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears members of the Disney Youth?
Yes, they were, but they later defected and became members of the Mickey Mouse Club, which I believe to be the work of Satan himself.
Well, I think because there was a loophole in that the government would offer you solace if you joined a proactive club in the community. So a lot of those people came over and joined the Mickey Mouse Club right away.
Yes, as soon as they learned that they could take off the hat, that was the point when we lost them.
That's why in the original Mickey Mouse Club, you have, you know, Justin and Brittany, and then the 48-year-old Hans.
Yes. Yes, an unusual choice, but he was in the government's hands. We could not retrieve him.
He was a great singer, too. He got that baritone where all the other kids were more high tenors and sopranos.
Hans was a great loss for us. He did some good work.
Well, thanks so much. Because there's only one uniform, and I acknowledge they're probably pretty expensive, Vince and I will have to take turns wearing it. But we want you to open up our gift to you, Clarissa.
Thank you. I can't open it with my gloves.
Okay, I'll help you out here. Okay, Vince, can you tear out the wrapper? I'm just going to get this ribbon off here.
Sure. Here we go.
Okay, right, open the box for you. There you are,
Clarissa. Oh, is this some kind of sick joke?
What?
What do you mean?
Why would you give me this?
I don't understand. We put a lot of thought and time into this.
I don't understand how you think a lot of thought and time goes into just giving somebody a Colt 47, the very same one that I shot my mother with 30 years ago. But where did you find it? I threw it in the ocean.
But these are literally at every souvenir stand in the park.
Oh, that's right. They did memorialize my deed with a gift that you can bring home. I would say thank you, other than the flood of memories that are coming back to me.
Clarissa, you realize this is only an elaborate Pez dispenser. It's not a working gun.
Yeah, see here, if you pull the trigger, a little Pez comes out.
Oh, Jesus.
We're sorry. Clearly, we didn't understand the significance of this specific replica weapon. We can return it. We'll bring you back one of the Winchester Tootsie Roll dispensers.
Those are actually little turds.
I see.
It's because the Pez Corporation didn't want any other candy in the park, right?
No, they specifically said, "You will not sell our candy, you racist fucks," I believe was in the memo.
I think I read that in a legal statute somewhere. Pez v. Disney.
Yes.
Landmark case for copyright protection. Well, this has been great. This has really been lovely. Thank you so much for your thoughtful gift. Sorry again for what will probably be used again as testimony against you. But I appreciate the entire, you know, gift-giving ethos. It just makes me feel warm and fuzzy. Doesn't it do the same for you, Elliot?
It does. What also makes me feel warm and fuzzy are the fact-giving ethos, Vince.
Our favorite segment called Did You Know?
Listeners, Did You Know is our weekly rapid-fire fact segment firing five fast facts at you, the listener, from whatever town we're in. This week we have five, no different than any other week. And Vince, I think you have the first one.
I sure do, Elliot. Did you guys know? You probably did, Clarissa. You seem like the historic type. That the original concept for Donald Duck, his name Ron Duck, was thrown out because of one of the many legal embroilments of Disney Place for his signature pantslessness.
Well, doesn't Donald Duck not have pants either?
He does not. The difference, of course, being that Ron Duck was as... The decision from the Supreme Court states anatomically too correct.
That makes sense. Clarissa, are there any people that play Ron Duck in the park?
Yes, absolutely. The same hobo that you can suck down a slightly hard spaghetti strand with plays Ron Duck, where he wears a tiny little, you would call it a child's blazer, and just strips off his trousers.
That's why that guy wasn't wearing pants. Okay, it's all coming back to me now.
Yes.
Well, Vince, I didn't know that. I kind of wish I didn't. But did you guys know that Disney Place is home to many different iterations of Mickey Mouse?
Oh, is that so, Elliot? Tell me more.
Yeah. So, Vince, of course, we had one of our listeners who played Marco Mouse write in. He was, of course, the Bolivian Mickey Mouse. But as Mickey Mouse was franchised out more and more, he had different iterations in different countries. And because Disney Place couldn't afford the original Mickey Mouse, they had to have different mascots from different countries. Probably the most famous one is Milkovich Mouse, the Czechoslovakian Mickey Mouse. He is very misanthropic and very despondent. His first debut movie, Steamboat Milkovich, was about him running a train off the tracks, but kids really love him here.
I feel like his anti-Soviet sentiment really resonates with our youth here in America.
Mm-hmm. And that was actually the subject of his other film, Being John Milkovich. Clarissa, are you friends with the guy who plays Milkovich around here?
We're specifically told to be friends with him. So, yes.
Why are you required?
Why? Is that what you asked?
Yeah, why are you required to be his friend?
We're all under contract because he's lonely. And if nobody signed a form, nobody would look at him.
That makes sense.
Maybe you could talk about my favorite Mickey Kamiki Maka Mouse, the Hawaiian-themed Polynesian Mickey.
Yes, he's a favorite of the Japanese businessmen who frequent us so often, mostly because the fun thing with him is if you get close enough, if it's the right time of day, you can open a small door on his Mickey tummy, and inside is some hot Spam sandwiches.
That sounds positively delightful.
It's a nod to Hawaii, where the state that purchases the most Spam in the United States.
Wow, I'm learning even more than I bargained for here on this Did You Know segment. Hopefully that trend continues. Clarissa, do you have the next Did You Know for us?
Yes. Did you know that we have recently dropped our prices to a stunning $5,000 for Disney Place's own version of Walt Disney's Cryo Sleep, which he is currently in? You can freeze any member of your family, including yourself, at any stage of life. So we've got some 5-year-olds in there. We've got some 90-year-olds in there. It's not going to be quite as state-of-the-art as the Lord himself, what Mr. Disney is in, but it will be a nice big bucket of ice, and we'll put you in that and make you real cold, preserving your life.
Well, it seems like they've kind of run out of storage for these people, because when I was at the elephant ears stand, I saw the guy open up the freezer, and there was actually a human being in there that he chipped some ice off of for my drink.
Yes, they are multiple uses. Sometimes we just move them to the graveyard because it seems easier.
Wow, that fact, macabre as it may be, was enlightening for me. I didn't know that. Did you guys know that one of the fan favorite attractions here at Disney Place is It's Not That Small of a World After All, Not Really?
So, Vince, can you describe this a little bit?
Yeah, it's an exhibit. Some would call it a ride. Some would call it an experience where you go through and you see a bunch of different cultures, except for the cultures are all Central and Northern European.
Yes, the perfect people, as we call them.
That is what you call them. That language in specific is written all over the inside of the tunnel, scrawled almost manically in what seems to be red paint.
It's definitely blood.
I see. And that makes more sense that way. Most of it in German.
Indeed, the language of the creator himself. A lot of people don't know Walt Disney was 100% German and merely dyed his hair brown to fit in America, but it was a beautiful white blonde.
Walter Disneychi, I think his name was, right?
Yes, that was his birth name.
Well, Vince, that sounds horrifying. I did not know that. But did you guys know that although we've touched on more than a few instances where this park is fun for adults as well, in addition to kids, there is another one that I have learned about.
What is it, Elliot?
As we all know, Disney films are rife with innuendo, let's say, or hidden messages. And so one of the games you can play as a parent walking around the park is Innuendo Bingo. And this is where you look at all the different hidden messages scrawled around the park. So if you look up at the sky at night, you'll see the most prominent constellation over Xavier Montana spells out sex.
Yes, it does.
Or, Clarissa, I'm sure because you're here every day, you know some of these other hidden messages or images.
I don't want to give all of them away because the game is so fun for the parents.
True, true.
But if you turn to the right, immediately after you turn left on Butter Avenue, you will see one of those cardboard cutouts where you're supposed to put your faces. Mm-hmm. There's one, there's two at the bottom and one further off to the left for the family. And if you turn around and just look at it after you've taken the picture, you'll realize your children have become the ball sack and you are the head of the shaft.
It doesn't seem like that one is that hidden.
Well, you wouldn't know if you just don't know unless you do it.
It doesn't seem entirely subtle to me, but I guess I haven't done it myself. I'm looking at one of the bingo cards here. One of them says funnel cakes that look like somebody pooed. And then the center square says Arbeit macht frei space.
Yes, that's correct.
Well, this has been truly eye-opening. I'm glad that we're leaving, but at the same time, it's with a heavy heart. I have to say thank you, Clarissa, for your time, and we have to go to our final segment. Wish you were here.
Listeners, we wish that you could come with us to every single town each week, but the reality is you can't. So Vince and I like to sign off each episode with an audio letter written from us to you. And Vince, Clarissa, goes something like this. Dear listener, wish you were here in Xavier, Montana.
Home to many things, but most notably, Disney Place.
And Disney Place is home to one of the most amazing characters we have ever met. And that's Clarissa, who plays, of course, Bambi's mom.
Also home to many amusements, interests, and dangers, as you may find yourself hit by a stray slug, strangled in a closet, or simply dead in a freezer.
But if you want to take a stroll down memory lane or pledge your allegiance to the Disney regime, then please go to Disney Place in Xavier, Montana.
Farewell from these parts to yours.
Listeners, I hope you enjoyed our stay in Xavier, Montana, home to Disney Place. It was a magical experience for my brother and I. Hope it was for you as well. And I hope you're with us next week when we're in Winnipeg, Maine.
Winnipeg, Maine is a very patriotic American town that is constantly trying to bolster tourism through drumming up a war with Canada. So come back. It's going to be fun.